You heard them wailing away and the audience really getting into it. This was recorded and performed live at the Pythian Temple in Manhattan. It's now a luxury condo on, what street is that? 70th Street between Columbus Avenue and Broadway. It was at one time, of course, the Knights of Pythias used to meet there. It was one of the major meeting points, and then it became a recording studio, and now it's a luxury condo. But at that time, this was 1952, Mary Lou Williams, you should get to know this lady, incredible musician. You heard her just in the background, just keeping everything going on piano and giving all the members of her orchestra their time to wail. That was Sea Jam Blues with Vic. We started out with Harold Shorty Baker on trumpet, and we just heard from Morris Lane on tenor sax, but also Vic Dickinson appears on trombone, Newell John on guitar, Ed Safransky on bass, and Don LeMond on drums. And, of course, Mary Lou Williams, composer, incredible musician, and a fine, fine lady. She did a lot of really beautiful pieces of music on piano. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and you know what the deal is. Today is the day to free your mind. Why? Because it's been a week from hell, and the way things are looking, it's just a precursor of another week from hell. It's right around the corner. But with your help, we can wade through this thick fog of misinformation, disinformation, and no information about what really matters. So free your mind. 888-874-4888. Jay's already on the line. He's in queue. Hello, Jay from New York. You're on the air.
Hello, Sister Utrice. How are you feeling and how are you doing?
I'm okay. I thought I envisioned you were kind of doing your own version of the swing back there.
I'm really enjoying what you will play. You know, one day you're going to give me my wish and talk about your love of jazz. Myself, I like Afro-Cuban music.
I do too. I love old music, actually. But I love older music. It's great. You know, you get a chance to listen to the actual elements of the music and how they harmonize with each other. But what's on your mind today?
Well, Utrice, I think you're going to get mad at me today, and I apologize ahead of time, but I have to do it. I really do. I'm very, very sick of Benjamin Crump. The man is an absolute disgrace
to
the lawyer hood. Benjamin Crump.
Oh, okay.
He is a disgrace to being a black lawyer.
Say who Benjamin Crump is, so people will know.
Well, Benjamin Crump is the lawyer who handled the Trayvon Martin case, and it seems like he gets involved with all of these incidents of our young people being killed and our elderly
being killed. We're getting a lot of feedback. Are you on speaker?
Okay, this may be better, Utrice.
Yeah, a lot. It would be really good to cut down on the reverb.
Okay, sorry about that. But yes, he's a lawyer that goes around the country and supposedly, do the work or file lawsuits against the state for victims of police brutality and police murders. But the thing is this, he never gets any type of change in the way that the police policies and actions are towards our people once he makes these million-dollar settlements with the states or the cities or the municipalities or whatever. Now, I don't know if you know this, but in the case of Sarah Bland, her attorney, which wasn't Crump, was able to get some sort of changes in the way in which, police interact with people when they pick them up and the way things are done once they get into the jail. So, that lawyer at least tried to make some sort of a difference. But it seems like this Benjamin Crump, all he does is get on TV and just talk nonsense and don't do the necessary things to make changes like Alton Maddox did in New York City, which basically led to him being banned from the courtroom, because Alton had a strategy, like and some of your listeners know, in regards to he wanted a special prosecutor, or he just wasn't going along with the nonsense. And it wasn't about him suing to get money for the family or anything of that nature. It was about trying to systematically change the way that our people are being treated. And this guy Crump, with Sharpton and the rest of them, are just basically selling us out constantly for what? So they could get a couple of dollars. But the thing that also annoys me is that every time you turn around and one of these incidents happen, they're talking about going to march. Now listen, I'm 50-some years old. I'm not going to march nowhere. I'm not walking nowhere to stand up and protest a situation where I know that nothing is going to change, and in the process give these people who are killing me my money. Because basically what happened is that you go and march, and then you go and you give your money to these people who are pressing you. And in the process, nothing changes, but Al and Ben and the rest of them get rich.
You happen to strike a sore point with me as well, and I've raised it many, many times. And this, I have to put this squarely in the lap of the community. It is their job. When your leaders go off on a tangent because it suits them or because there's a lot of money going that route, you have to call it out. You have to shame them. What Jay is explaining is that this particular lawyer, Benjamin Crump, I mean, look, there's room for all kinds of lawyers. There's room for all kinds of lawyers. And Lord knows we need as many African-American lawyers as you can have out there, considering the state of affairs with African-Americans in terms of the need for legal representation. So I have no problem with that. But I have called them on this program the collectors of bones. That's what they do, the Sharptons and others. There was a time when their interest was very genuine, and they did become involved in community protest and action on behalf of the community. But that changed dramatically once you saw all these multi-million dollar settlements coming down the pike. Now, the law does provide for compensatory damages and punitive damages in the deaths or the wrongful deaths of a person by police. That is part of the law. Okay, I get that. But in none of these cases, except, at least to my knowledge, in covering these kinds of cases, the only exception has been Alton Maddox, who is, you know, they'll pursue whatever it is that the court provides or the law provides in terms of compensatory and punitive damages when a person is wrongfully killed by police. However, the issue, we are told, is justice. Justice. That's why they're calling now. They're calling people out to come out in the street and support their fight for justice. And it is not a fight for justice. And how will we know that it's a fight for justice? We will know it's a fight for justice when we see a legal brief showing that they intend to do some very serious business in the struggle for justice. And that is a petition to the highest court in the state, a petition to the governor, a demand for the appointment of a special prosecutor. We would see these things to indicate a serious pursuit of justice. I have never seen it. What they do is they mobilize the community, and the community people just want to help. They really want to help. They trot the victims, the families, the victim's family all over the place and use them as a way of raising money. That's one kind of money, but also to send a signal to the governments that they expect to sit across the table from to negotiate a settlement. And the more that they could demonstrate that, hey, we have our hands on the community, they listen to us and they do our bidding. When we tell them hit the streets, we have hundreds of thousands of people hitting the streets, as it was in the case of Eric Garner. But at Eric Garner and Michael Brown. And in no time flat, it dies. There is no pursuit of justice. And what it is a way of leveraging the money they think that they can get come settlement time. Now, that takes care of the family's needs, perhaps. But most importantly, it takes care of the lawyer's fee, because he gets a cut. And the main matter that should be pursued is ignored, and that is justice. So you hit a very sore point for me. I've talked about it here at length, and I wonder what it is that it would take. The one thing I think it would take is people calling them out. You have to shame these people. Whenever your leaders mess up, you cannot be quiet about it. You have to call them out on it and let them know they're not running any games on you. Look how many opportunities we had here to create meaningful and true justice changes. If a city sees this pattern, or a state sees this pattern all across the country, that people mean business. When you dispatch any member of our community in such a brutal way, somebody's going to pay the price. And I don't mean in terms of a settlement. I mean in terms of going to jail. Somebody's got to pay that price. In the case of Amadou Diallo, settlement. Case of Eric Garner, settlement. All the Sandra Bland's family, settlement. Although now they're saying they're not so sure they did the right thing there. But the lawyer's most important focus throughout all of these cases has been, what's the biggest chunk of change we can get out of the city? And once they get to the settlement part, which means immediately they get their cut, they cut out. There is no pursuit of justice. And we have to say it out loud. We have to call them on it, because they've made a lot of money. They make a lot of money this way. And as I said, I'm not opposed to people making money. This is a professional service. And if you provide a professional service, you can be paid for it. And the family should be compensated for the loss of a lost one. But that is provided by law. That is part of the law. The law also provides the means by which you can pursue justice. And that is the overwhelming concern of the community. Not settlements, but justice. Thanks, Jay, for your call. We go to Desiree from New York. You're on the air, Desiree. No, you're not. Matt from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved PRN Utrice Lead Stories family.
Thank you.
I tell you, boy, this situation is almost out of, part of it seems to be out of some surrealistic novel, because it's hard to figure out what's really going on. But I want to make 2 points in particular regarding the recent spate. And I also want to mention Romali Graham, which, you know, I know you can't mention all the instances, but his is so particular, because here, this police officer, Hayes, breaks down the door, gets into the house. So the idea of Al having access to the Second Amendment, Romali was supposed to have a gun in terms of the Castle Doctrine, but all of that is swept under the rug. And I'm going to be doing a piece, because I've been working on a couple columns on Preet Bharara finding nothing in the civil rights law to, you know, and instead does a press release. So we're in quite a pickle. But until we connect, I'll be in the fodder for the most brutal, obscene prison system, because I don't know, I'm usually actually not available at this time, but I don't know whether you covered the Attica massacre anniversary. But no. My understanding is, excuse me?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, but that's important, because I heard Sophia Elijah saying that the situation in terms of how many black men they're able to beat to death or throw down the stairs, and there's absolute impunity. So until we connect the fact that we're the fodder for the most brutal prison system on the planet, although we use the drugs less and we sell the drugs less. So that's a big paradox. The other point I want to make is that the Black Lives Matter, and I'm so proud of the youth, because I came up through the 60s and I was out there marching against their wars. And so the young people who are able to get out there and do the marches and stand down toward the more militarized police, that's excellent. But they made a point around the unions, which is so key, Utrice and family, in that, in fact, in there's a bill that's just about to go into effect October 1 in, what's this latest city we're dealing with? I'm a little bit sleep deprived here. What city is with this? Charlotte, right? The governor just signed a bill, I think it's B-972, that goes in effect October 1, where the police, fraternal order of police, whatever they call themselves, the union there, have managed to make sure that the video, millions of dollars in there having video, is going to be even more unavailable and not released. So how do you wrap your head around that? But we need to take on the fact that Black Lives Matter said that the unions themselves are anti-black. They come up from the KKK tradition, and until we start to take that on, and the other point I mentioned, nothing much is going to change. And the language has to be changed, too, because the helicopters guys called him. We're always suspects as black people, right? He was needing help. And
but here's the thing, Mott. We have, nonetheless, with all of these things happening, the leaders are the acolytes of a party that says, vote for Hillary. Because there is your salvation. Everything will be fixed. Vote for Hillary. They don't care about what is actually happening on the ground. They don't care about the objective conditions on the ground in communities where we live. They just care, just give me a vote and then get lost. I'll check with you again in another 4 years. That's really what they're talking about. And so again, because people do not punish leaders who betray them, and because they do not punish a party that is not at all of use to them, because they haven't adopted new strategies, they will keep experiencing the same things.
I absolutely agree with that. And don't forget that it's all somewhat of a charade, as it were, because didn't follow the meetings of the Bilderberger more recently in this year, but they might have created a Trojan horse. Some people call it a stalking horse in Trump. And what's in Trump is his original family name in the Donald, as it were, because he is so obscenely outrageous.
I understand your point. Here's my thing. Why are we paying attention to these things, which are distractions? Whatever you think about Donald Trump, whatever you think about Hillary Clinton, they are perfectly following the precepts of their world. And they're following their program, and they're following their system. People are wasting time and wasting precious resources and energy that should be used to putting together a system that works for you. Never mind what, you know, it is not going to be a surprise, no matter who wins. It is not going to be a surprise what the fallout will be for many communities that have been disempowered, systematically disempowered. But we continue to legitimize these awful systems that are oppressing you. And you know, what is the difference really between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump? My point is
that we need to understand and educate ourselves how the system manages to stay in place. That's the point I'm making. I agree with many of your points, but we just don't understand. So behind the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Kissingers, there's people whose name we generally don't know, is the point I'm trying to make.
I appreciate that point, but I would say what we really don't know and what would be of great help to us is to become familiar with the instructions left by people who took a great deal of time to impart their knowledge to us, but we don't pay attention to it. We don't know anything about it.
Listen,
if we
paid
attention to the instructions about reconstructing and controlling your community, the importance of land, purchasing land, the importance of having your own economic system, get to know that. I'm not going to be... The Bilderbergs don't need us to understand them, because even if we understood them, there isn't a damn thing we could do about it. We don't have the mechanisms, which is why we are here in 2016, and we have to choose not only the lesser of two evils, but the evil of two lessers. And this is perfectly fine with America. America is okay They blessed the candidacies of Donald Trump. They blessed the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. In their view, we had the first black president even saying the same thing. She is better. She is the best candidate ever, better even than her husband and better even than him. This is how much we've lost our minds. So if we need to examine anything, it would be so good if we can look at the different economic models that have been laid down. How do we, Crown Heights, which used to be called Crow Heights in Brooklyn, was the first free settlement in the state of New York.
Whoa.
These folks, in the midst of all this trenchant slavery, they didn't need anything from anybody. They built their own homes. They raised their own crops. They grew their own food. They created and made all their necessities. That was the history of Crown Heights. We don't do that. There is no place in New York where you have an established community, an organically functioning established community where they don't need very much from the outside world. But these people, they didn't have education. They didn't have doctorate degrees. They didn't go to Harvard. But they understood the value. Get a piece of land and start working the land. We don't need anything from the outside world. Except, here's a trick. In the middle of this trenchantly racist culture at the time, this community of black slaves, freed slaves, were looked at for the supply of eggs and milk and all these other things. That's how they thrived. So we have to get serious. We're not serious. We have not been suffering enough. And we are participating willfully and gleefully with the forces of oppression. So if we seem so well adjusted to oppression, guess what will happen? We will be oppressed. And that is, Sharpton isn't teaching that. The NAACP isn't teaching that. We are not getting an orientation that was so natural. You go back to the days of slavery again. This was the knowledge that you gained as a child. You have to learn how to put your own system of survival together. This was not a joke. But we believe that somehow we have some kind of a buffer of protection because we have a degree, we have this, we have that. No. We have not seen anybody, except just the other day, Minister Farrakhan pronounced Hillary Clinton a wicked woman. It means that's a wicked woman. We know what that means. It means that no member of the Nation of Islam is going to vote for Hillary Clinton. We get that. He said, that's a wicked woman. But we are not having the clarity and the vision from our leadership. They're fully compromised. They're working against us and using us in the same way that the system uses us. So we tolerate it. We have a high tolerance for these fakers, these frauds, these phonies, and we lift them up. And this includes the president. I mean, how are you going to talk to people, tell them you will consider it a personal insult to you if black folks don't vote for Hillary Clinton? You're out of your mind. But you have to be out of your mind because the system requires you to disembody yourself. You are being oppressed, but you have to persuade yourself that you're not. So this is the dilemma that we have. Thanks so much for your call today.
Could I conclude with that? What someone once said, and Alambe repeated it, I can't think of the person, but when the conditions become such that that's when the people will finally unite, something to that effect. So I appreciate the many excellent points you made in the dialogue, and I'll continue to listen. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call today. We go to Julie from New York. New York is kind of cornering the market today. What's going on, rest
well,
of the country?
I just got on.
Julie, I hope.
Yes.
You're on
Hello?
Here.
Okay. I was late getting on, and I missed yesterday, but I wanted to go back. I went back to listen to the July 14th show where you referenced that report.
Yes.
And I put that in a post on Facebook recently, but it was the day that there were technical difficulties, so I hope I think the archives were okay. But I put a post this morning after the show yesterday, even though I missed it. I got up this morning and listened to it. And can I read what I said?
Sure.
I said, after the recent killings in Charlotte and Tulsa, my mind returned to a show earlier this summer. July 14, 2016, to be exact, and I even saved the report that discussed in this show, as noted in an earlier post, but I still find it amazing that the President of the United States should issue such a statement. The nerve of him to say this, considering he would not have been elected without the black vote. I drank the hope and change Kool-Aid. I went to Bristol, PA for him, voted for him, and now I find it insulting that he would even ask us to be concerned about his legacy. I would not even vote for him again, much less HRC. So please, Mr. President, I say, be insulted.
You don't mind hurting his feelings that
no,
way.
No, I don't. And I'm having a little meetup tomorrow. I don't have a lot of followers, unfortunately. My godchild was the young woman that took down the Confederate flag in South Carolina. So she's been on TV for the past 2 days, and I've become it's gotten really emotional. But I feel like we need to make a statement, and if we don't straighten these things out, the millennials are going to be the ones to suffer for our lack of for the situation that we're in now. So I'm doing a meetup tomorrow to try to get people to go out to the debate at Hofstra in protest, because in 2012, Jill Stein was out there, and I actually regretted not voting for her. And I've come to learn more about I know the Green Party's taken a lot of negative comments and so forth, but I do feel like it's an alternative that we have, and if we can mobilize the millennials especially to vote, it's a way of making a statement that we're not that it won't be business as usual to any vote other than for a Republican or a Democrat.
Good move. Thank you. Thanks for contributing today. Thanks a lot. We have Ed from Queens.
Yeah, good afternoon, Teresa. How you doing?
Fine, thank you, Ed. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm kind of frustrated with all the things that are going on, so I just wanted to get something off of my chest, and I believe your show is the best forum to do it.
thank you.
But basically it's this. We talk about black power. We talk about Black Lives Matter, but nobody addresses the fundamental thing that will give you power in this society. You start off with economics. You start off with purchasing land, like you were talking about earlier. You start these examples. Hello?
Oh, okay.
Hello?
You're on.
Yeah. These examples are paramount in African American history. And if you educate yourself and you see Rosewood, Tulsa, Black Wall Street, or Haiti, the community down in Florida, you'll see that we have the capability to be self-sufficient and independent. This capitalist system only respects those who are self-sufficient and independent. And until the revolution takes off with everybody, we're going to have to deal with what we have to deal with. The fundamental problem that I believe, especially in those that know, is that we are the only group of people to where the government, to where the establishment in this country has a concerted effort to destroy us. They study us. When we do develop independent economic systems, they attack us. So we have to look at that. And I know it's very tiring. I've spoken to other people about it. Yeah, how long can we do this? How long can we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and then get screwed by this government? But it's an ongoing process. You can't give up. And like the previous caller was referring to Marcus Garvey, when all else fails to unite the people, circumstances will. And we're coming to that point again. We're coming to that point where we're going to have to do something. When they have so disregarded us so much that you can have your hands up on a car and get shot, not once, not twice, but several times, and it becomes like a daily event, we've got to do something. And I don't think we're ready for an armed revolution, because we don't have the wherewithal, we don't have the machinery, and we don't have action, we don't have the bullets to establish it. But we're ready for economic revolution. Start teaching people about the history of Africans in America. Start teaching people about the history of how we were self-sufficient and sustaining. And start developing your own small economic groups. Because everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you've got to start somewhere. And that's my piece for today.
Thank you. How are you feeling now?
A little better. It's good to say it, but we got to make some action on it.
But you made a very valuable contribution. But it is also important, and I asked you the question that way, just to get to hint at the idea that a lot of the point of oppression is to psychologically wear you down so that you don't pose any resistance at all. You're so consumed with your own oppression and trying to figure out what's your next move that you don't even have time to think. So this is a good way of helping you relieve yourself of the burden. Give a little bit more space in your head so that you can continue to think. Thanks so much, Ed, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. 888-874-4888 is a number to call. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good, thank you. And I'm with you all the way. It's time for a new beginning. We have the power to change the world, community by community. Community pride is what it's all about. We can start with our own block. You know, I go out on Sunday morning with one of those pickup sticks, and I have a garbage bag, and I pick up every cigarette butt, every piece of garbage, every little package, everything on my block. I don't go too far, but on my block, I clean it up, and I believe in doing that, and it makes the block looks cleaner all week long because of it. I have a neighbor who has bird feeders, and she's always feeding the birds, and there's a lot of birds that weren't in the neighborhood before, that because of her, she brings the birds in. And I think that we can all work together on our block. For instance, I think that we can have neighborhood Sundays where maybe they stop the cars on the street, neighbors come out, we can plant trees and flowers, we can work on community gardens, better food, share our ideas. We can have community picnics. We can have community kid days because the kids are just in front of the TV. They're bored. We can have police and community neighborhood friendship days where we can get to know our local police people and let's not just be afraid of each other, but actually try to establish a new relationship with each other. I think ghettos into gardens is a way to go, and maybe more community cafes where people can sit around and chat with each other. I think that's the way to go. It has to start with our block and getting to know your neighbor, getting to honor the elderly, perhaps cleaning up the graffiti. There's a lot we can do, but I think that's where if we put a lot of energy there rather than just be afraid and self-incarcerate, that I think we could change the world. So I'm with you 100%. It's all about community pride and people being with people in the community, getting to know each other.
Thank you. Since you've been picking up litter and cleaning up your block,
yes,
as a one-man sanitation crew,
yes,
have you gotten any feedback at all or any reaction from your neighbors?
Yes, well, I usually do it like really early in the morning, you know, just about daybreak, so that there's less cars and less people around. But I have experienced neighbors coming up to me out of nowhere thanking me. They say they see me out of the window, or they're you know, around, or they're walking their dog, and they thank me. They're openly thankful, and I don't know. It makes me feel good. My community is like not just strewn with garbage, and there's a certain kind of, it just looks better, it feels better, and it gives rise to more community interaction. So yes, I have gotten appreciation from the community. I've been doing that for years, and it just makes me feel good. And you wouldn't believe how much garbage I pick up sometimes. People just throw their cigarette butts down, the packages down, all the fast food packages, and it just stays there. And it creates like a slum. So I figure that by picking it all up, I'm sort of making a better world for everybody, and safer and cleaner for my neighborhood. And no one has to thank me. I'm just happy to do it. I'm happy to clean up my block. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's a great project. And you know, it sounds like a small thing, but I can tell you, I have witnessed the incredible changes that these small things really create, and they also bring the community together. There was a, not far from where I lived in Brooklyn, State Street, it was a really horrible sight. Prostitution, you had all kinds of criminal elements. This was a residential neighborhood, families, but the elements had taken over the block. And somebody came up with the idea of just planting flowers.
And I love it.
It is now one of the most incredibly beautiful blocks in the entire borough. It's won many prizes. And soon enough, you see people coming out in the street. Their children are not afraid to be out there. And there is this feeling of neighborhood. And it started with just planting the flowers.
Hey, gardens and that's, is it's the ghettos.
A great way to do it. Thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you.
Daoud from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Treese. How's everything? Fine,
thank you. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, thank you. Listen, I want to thank you for the wonderful words of encouragement that you've been providing over the years. I've followed you back when you were on Gil Noble's show at times. We were working for the Amsterdam News. You know, it's wonderful to have people who are conscious, especially in this day and time. You know, and I appreciate the thoughts we're talking about as far as getting our people, African-Americans, to self-empowerment. I try to do that with the children, you know, with whom I work, and get them to try to have motivation and belief in themselves, you know, because it's important. Like you were saying before, as far as relying on these leaders, we know that they're not, you know, they don't exist on behalf of the people. So the people have to turn around and rely on themselves, you know. I think it's critical.
And they got to get rid of the leaders. They have to fire the leaders. I keep saying this all the time. It's really, really important. When you have made an investment, you have to make it with the idea that your life is on the line, literally.
Right.
And when people mess around with that, and they betray your interests, you have to fire them and do it in a very public way.
Yes.
You know, like Sanders, I imagined that his movement, people from his movement will call a news conference and symbolically have his contract and set it on fire. Say, no, you're fired. You're gone.
Yeah.
You know, you are not authorized to conduct any business in our name.
That's but, right.
They've let it go. Look what happened to Jesse Jackson in Sharpton. That's what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so they become a buffer between what the people really want and a system that owns their leadership.
That's
and
true.
It's terrible.
And, you know, it's business as usual, and the people don't get anything done that they need done in our communities. Like we were saying about, you know, community gardens, for an example, beautifying the neighborhood. You know, showing, taking pride in where you live. They don't get any of this done, much less trying to create jobs and other opportunities that the people need, you know. And it's just a shame. People have to really take more responsibility and accountability for themselves, you know.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in today.
And you know what, Teresa, I just want to say I'm really happy that, you know, your health is really on the mend. You know, you've been working with Gary now. I'm looking forward to working with Gary in October. I've been diagnosed with interstitial lung disorder. So I'm looking forward to working with him and getting on the mend so I can, you know, keep my work up, helping the people to empower themselves, you know?
Great. But first, you got to help yourself get back to that point where you can help others, right?
That's true. That's true. Okay. That's what I must do.
Thank you, Dawood, for your call today.
Thank you, too.
And thank you.
Have
this
a good
is great.
One.
We have to have a nice exchange, a place where we could talk, and this is the place to talk. 888-874-4888. We have Willie from Brooklyn. Are you there?
Yes, my beloved sister. How are we? How are we?
How are we? You tell me. Yes. How are we, Willie?
How are we? I don't know. I'm asking you. How are we?
We are okay. We're hanging in.
Wonderful. Well, let me just start like this. You are the shining star for us and a guide for us. I have a question for you. Okay. What is it, from your vantage point, what is the two most important things anyone can give you?
Can give me?
Yeah. And I think it applies to all people on the earth.
Well, I think genuine affection is good. A genuine spirit. You come with a genuine spirit. That's fantastic. You can't get better than that.
Okay.
I'll bring it down to that. Just one thing. A genuine spirit.
Okay. Well,
why you ask that?
Very simple, because we don't know most of us don't know what's really important, because we should know this. What's the most important thing anyone can do for me? And it applies to all people. Number one, it's respect. That's number one. Number two is information. For example, if we had really respected you, I disagree with your argument. People, a lot of times you hear people say, look, we love you. That bothers me. Please don't do that. I remember when you were at DEI. You've given your whole life to serving the black community. Now, one person made up some stories, and your life was threatened because we have no respect for ourselves and one another. It's as simple as that. The second thing is information. You see what I'm saying? Because what you don't know can kill you. Now, I can make you respect me. We can't do this. But we have to start there. Respect one another. There were things that you did at WBI. I didn't agree with you. But out of the respect and affection I have for you, I said, oh, you're not going to kill her. Yeah, you could kill her, but you're going to kill all of us. I was one of those at the station. You didn't know why I was there. But I'm saying, when you killed Malcolm X, you did the last one. Because I knew you weren't what they said you were doing. So I was there to protect you. You never asked them what I had. But you could kill her. But you're going to kill me, and you who want to kill may wind up dying too. Because, no, you don't do us like this. You see what I'm saying? Now,
Let me just put a little context here. When I was at BAI toward the end of my years at BAI, I was managing the station, or asked to manage the station, and it appeared to trouble a lot of people who had another plan, and that was to take over the entire network. I told people exactly what was going on. They did not believe me. It turns out 16 or 17 years later, they're now finding out that actually it was the truth. And our lives, really, we were under constant threat. We had bomb threats and death threats. Christ. This is from progressives, by the way. Okay.
Exactly.
Somebody was
exactly.
A revolutionary. And many people from the community, and I will never forget Willie being one of them. Many people from the community just showed up to protect us as we worked during the day. They didn't ask for anything. They didn't even ask whether they could come. They just showed up. And that's what I mean. That was an example, Willie, of a very genuine heart. You don't even need to explain that. It means that people are genuinely concerned and they mobilize and they follow through with these concerns. So we found many days, almost every single day, we had people who just showed up to make sure that we were okay.
Based
and
on
that,
a lie.
That was extraordinary.
Based on a lie. Don't forget that that part.
Yeah,
it was a lie.
Yeah.
But because of no respect for us and one another, we took sides from this, I don't want to say that, individual. And 20 years later, I saw, oh my God, I don't believe it. Because you got rid of those racist bums in station. And 20 years later, I disagree with that. Before you got rid of one of them, that said, you can't, in my mind, I said, no, you can't do this. But 20 years later, I said, oh my God, now I see it. My God. I can't believe it. And,
you know what it is to say, well, okay, we are going to bring in a union. And you have people fighting you against it. they don't want to bring, no. Even when I talked with the unions, we were affiliated inexplicably with the Electrical Workers Union. And I wanted to bring in the AFTRA Union, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, which is the industry union. This means immediately there would be benefits, there'll be a retirement fund, there would be health benefits and so forth. And they sent the blacks to attack me. And when I called the unions together, and they said, we've never dealt with something. Are we understanding that you want to shift the unions because you want people to get paid at a higher salary level? You want to provide benefits? You want to do this? This is what you really want to do? I said, yeah, that's what we really want to do. They sent people to fight us with this. And I live to see. Of course, nobody talks about it. But some of the same people who were fighting, and I mean really fighting, against this union shift, and the unions themselves said, we've never done this before, but we are delighted, one union, to hand over the shop to the AFTRA union. And they worked beautifully. It was a smooth transition, no problem. I live to see that one person, the leader of the pack, became very ill. Had it not been for the benefits, he would have been dead by now. But, you can't hold this, that's them. You see people for who they are and you keep moving. It is not to be a surprise to anybody that when you are trying to do something, there will be people standing in your path.
That's right.
Because they're sent as agents to destroy you. And it will almost always happen from the inside. It will almost always happen that way. So I was not surprised. Wow. But I was surprised at the level of violence that we lived with, where we had, we constantly under physical assault, or constantly under threat, constantly under bomb threats and death threats and so forth. And all we were trying to do is to run a radio station.
Simple. We're still doing that. Thank you, Harvey from Brooklyn. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Harvey's from Berkeley.
Berkeley. Well, I'm going to the printer right now to pick up some PRN shirt. It says, I wanted to get your feet on it. But, and the guys in my circle, we we send money certain month for the PRN because we have to have money. Now, I said that we're going to take Brooklyn. I got, you know, when you were sick, I said, yeah. My God, in your health challenges, look at the kind of work that these people are doing. Well, what are we doing? So the people in my circle, it's hard to get them together in one place. I said to them, listen, I want to make PRN the station in New York. Here, I got this. And, you know, the arguments are blah, blah. It's just the way they carried on. So I said, okay, we can't do that. No, I said, no. We can do anything we want to if we put our minds to it and push for it. And that's why I'm going to pick up the shirt now. And everybody in my on the plantation, I'm on a plantation. Everybody on the plantation, I'm going.
So you're promoting PRN?
Sister Utrecht, we have families in Japan calling. By the way, your job in family is to educate the Japanese. And this, I want you to be this CNN Plus. For this whole world. That's what I think it can be done. I know
I think we have a great crew. I so adore this audience because there's so much electricity, there's so much give and take, and it's genuine. It is not fake. And this is great. So I look forward every day. It keeps me going, as a matter of fact. It is incentive to keep on going, and I so value it. But we've come to the end of our time today, Willie. I'm so delighted to hear from you.
It's my pleasure, my sister. Love you. I care. Wait. I like you. Brother Claude and Sister Gertrude are the ones I love. I like
Thank
you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And this is a weekend. Try and make some time for good people in your life, friends and family. Surround yourself with people who bring positive dimension to your life. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. See you Monday. Bye-bye.